but for actually doing what Ronald Reagan talked about in his 1981 inaugural address, a sort of rolling back the federal establishment, that just seems not to happen. My name is William Vogeley. I am a contributing editor of the Claremont Review of Books, a visiting scholar at the Salvatore Center at Claremont McKenna College, and the author of Never Enough, America's Limitless Welfare State. So one thing that the Never Enough does is to really sort of break down by looking over a long historical arc how much the government has spent and how it has been spending it. But for actually doing what Ronald Reagan talked about in his 1981 inaugural address, sort of rolling back the federal establishment, that just seems not to happen. There are ordinary, extraordinary circumstances, and then there are extraordinary, extraordinary circumstances. Ordinary, extraordinary circumstances are when something happens and politicians and people feel, well, the government must do something. Hurricane Katrina, the financial meltdown, the war in Iraq, 9/11. The strong impetus then is, well, we have to deal with this problem. We can worry about the doctrine, we can worry about the cost, we can worry about the borrowing 5, 10, 20, 30 years down the road. Let's deal with this thing now and worry about that stuff later. There has been in my lifetime one extraordinary circumstance where the sort of the economic and political planets all lined up in a way that we actually had running government surpluses and government was growing in some ways slower than it ever had been. I'm talking about the late 1990s. We had a Democratic president, a Republican House and Senate. We had an economic boom that nobody really foresaw, propelled by the dot-com revolution. And we had in that sort of what George Will calls that holiday from history between the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 and 9/11 in 2001, we had a rapid build-down of national defense. And suddenly we went from talking in the early 90s about curtailing deficit spending to in the late 90s talking about, believe it or not, surpluses, people said, as far as the eye could see. The hope that all those planets will line up again, well, that's a lot to hope for. I think to get anywhere near that level again is going to require not just good luck, but in a sense, a much more determined effort all around. The denial of the possibility that there is an endpoint is, I think, crucial to the sort of liberal enterprise. That it's not so much that there's an answer to the question, where does this thing culminate, as there is a studied, comprehensive, and so far very successful effort to avoid even addressing the problem. FDR, instead of presenting himself as one of the founder's critics, presented himself as their ally. So he sort of culminated this effort in his famous 1944 State of the Union address and discussed a second Bill of Rights, the rights to housing and education and medical care, and sort of left the door ajar and said, and beyond these rights that I'm listing, there could be additional rights to social welfare benefits that additional generations of Americans will decide they need. Well, once you rights-ize the welfare state in this way, then that has consequences. So when we have a situation, as we did recently here in California, where it turned out that people were could take their sort of a food stamp and public assistance kind of ATM cards. And among the places where those were accepted were casinos on Indian reservations, strip clubs, and massage parlors. People, you know, the first reaction was, well, this is a scandal, this is terrible, what could be happening here? But in a certain sense, the people who were taking those cards to those places were good New Deal liberals in that they heard the rhetoric about how they had a right to these benefits and concluded, entirely plausibly, hey, if I've got a right to this stuff, that means it's mine. That means I have a stronger claim on holding and using these resources than anybody else in America. And if I get this card and these benefits and want to take them to the casino, who's to say I can't? I think there are a lot of libertarians who think, well, we've been telling people, we've been sort of evangelizing the Friedman gospel. We've been saying that if you understand that big government is irreconcilable with individual liberty, and you tell people about this, eventually they will understand and they will vote out the rascals. They will vote out the big government welfare state regulators. And the fact that we've been evangelizing and this hasn't happened means, it can only mean that we haven't been evangelizing energetically enough. So if we double down, if we try harder, if we hold more seminars and get the road to serfdom or capitalism and freedom in front of more readers, eventually we'll succeed. Well, you know, eventually might not be soon enough. I mean, I think that libertarians, they face a painful dilemma if they step back and take stock of the historical trend. If they want to make a historical difference, they need to entertain the possibility of unpalatable compromises that may nevertheless be the only alternatives to sort of politically self-marginalizing themselves. Wake a liberal up at 2:30 in the morning and say, why do we have a welfare state? The first answer you'll get is, well, because we have to help people who are poor. America pushed back against this in a laudable and important way with the law that the Republican Congress passed in 1996 and Bill Clinton eventually, none too happily, signed. There was a sort of a nationwide commitment to the idea that welfare should be, as President Clinton said many times as a candidate for office and then as a president, it should be a helping hand but not a way of life. You know, and I think a lot of conservatives were very satisfied with that sort of political breakthrough, and really felt that both the abolition of as a program and the delegitimization as an idea of welfare was a settled question, that we were not going to go back there. But it's not quite so settled. We saw that once the Pelosi Congress with a Democratic president settled in 2009 with this economic crisis, one of their first things was to immediately begin instituting many of the provisions that people thought had been abolished permanently with the demise of AFDC. I think there are still a lot of liberals who view the 1996 law abolishing AFDC as a temporary rather than a settled question, and think that this is a battle that they are going to live to fight again and win. And I think there will again be an audience of people who are not ashamed about or reluctant about receiving such benefits.